He said, "A great revolution is taking place in our world, a social revolution in the minds and souls of men, and it has been transformed into a unified voice crying out, 'We want to be free.'" He said, "Some of you have knives, and I ask you to put them up. Some of you have arms, and I ask you to put them up. Get the weapon of nonviolence, the breastplate of righteousness, the armor of truth, and just keep marching." The philosophy of Dr. Martin Luther King is not really strange or new to us. It is a philosophy that was first preached nearly 2,000 years ago by another king who spoke of a peace and a brotherhood, of a love for his fellow man. And just as that king of the Jews so long ago suffered at the hands of violence and at the hands of ignorance and at the hands of injustice, just as he offered his body in redemption for that which killed him, an action which the Bible tells us saw the earth torn asunder in what must have been an outraged cry against this, the ultimate in ignominy and shame. So now has the black king suffered at the hands of that same violence, ignorance, and injustice, and offered himself to the same ideal. And we are experiencing all about us the outraged cry of national holocaust. As there were those who picked up the word of that man long ago and preached it through the ages down to a man named Martin Luther King, so must we now, all of us, everyone here, pick up the word from this fallen angel and carry it within us. That is, if his death is to be redemptive, which is what he said it must be. He said, "It may get me crucified, I may even die, but I once said, even if I die in the struggle, that he died to make men free." It is quite clear that Dr. King recognized the social ills of this nation, ills which were manifest through the convenient tool of racial injustice, but ills which lay, in fact, much deeper than that. This cause is branded with the misnomer of the Negro problem. It is branded with the name of the white problem. It is branded with all sorts of names, trying to find and to attach a label to what amounts to, basically, and without question, a human problem. Ultimately, the answer does not lie in the execution of legal machinery, because the philosophy of this cause is not regulated by man-made law. Civil rights laws are not a victory over injustice and humanity, not by any means. They are a tribute to the shame of a nation. The answer lies not in the violence of our city's streets, for anger, hatred, burning, looting, and killing are those things which Dr. King so deplored. Just as I am sure he deplored the negative attitude of government officials, whose only concern was to spend hundreds of thousands of dollars and a feverish, worried winter developing effective anti-riot techniques. Not to say that violence must not be quelled, certainly it must. But out of fear which the riots produce, the whole point is missed. We are told that civil rights has to be slow. This is a contradiction in terms. The whole philosophy of equality and of brotherhood and of love has been relegated to a convenient resting place in the often not entered attic of this nation's conscience. And when this position is questioned by the Martin Luther Kings, there are the rumblings of frightened people who say, "What more will the Negro expect? if he gains such rights as integrated schools and public facilities, voting rights, and progress in housing. What is implied here is the utterly amazing assumption that this society has the right to bargain with the Negro for the freedom which inherently belongs to him. The answer lies not in a separation of the races, though we might do well to understand the radical militants. Their philosophy has distorted, and they have been terribly hurt. And it is because they have been so hurt that their philosophy is warped. They have grown tired of trying to love their white brothers, and their patience has run out. So they seek to achieve a peaceful end through violent means, when in reality, only peaceful means will bring about a peaceful end. Dr. King preached this, and he practiced it. And when he was beaten, and he was beaten often, he prayed for his tormentors. He was jailed, he was spat upon, he was kicked, he was hurt. There were attempts upon his life and the life of his family. Truly, this man was scourged, he was made to wear a crown of thorns, and he was nailed to the cross. And all he had to say in defense of all this, all he did in defense of all this, was to pick up those around him who had fallen from the same tormenting, from the same kicking, from the same spitting, from the same inhuman action, was to pick them up and to whisper under his breath, "Father, forgive them, for they know not what they do." The answer is really very simple. And Dr. King has said it is very simple. Because it lies within each and every one of our grasps. It lies in the personal commitment of every man to the spirit of nonviolence and the genuine love and concern for his brother human being. It demands a compassion. It demands an understanding. It demands a giving of ourselves. Dr. King has said that we must carry this message in our hearts, and we must make it a part of our very existence. Living it every day. Living it every day of our lives. To this end, he was prompted to say, on that warm August day in Washington, "I say to you today, my friends, even though we face the difficulties of today and tomorrow, I still have a dream. It is a dream deeply rooted in the American dream. I have a dream that one day this nation will rise up and live out the true meaning of its creed. We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal. I have a dream that one day on the red hills of Georgia, sons of former slaves and sons of former slave owners will be able to sit down together at the table of brotherhood. I have a dream that one day even the state of Mississippi, a state sweltering with the heat of injustice, sweltering with the heat of oppression, will be transformed into an oasis of freedom and justice. I have a dream that my four little children will one day live in a nation where they will not be judged by the color of their skin, but by the content of their character. I have a dream that one day in Alabama, with its vicious racists and its governor having his lips dripping with the words of interposition and nullification, one day right there in Alabama, little black boys and black girls will be able to join hands with little white boys and white girls as sisters and brothers. I have a dream, not only in Alabama, not only in Mississippi, not only in Georgia, but in New York, in St. Louis, in Los Angeles, in Syracuse, in Rochester, in Buffalo, that one day we will all be able to join hands. Without this, if we cannot join hands, if we cannot overcome together, you and we, if we cannot go together, if we cannot go together to the mountaintop that Dr. King talked about so often and said that he had been to, if we cannot do it together, you and you and you and you, if we cannot do this together, we will never go at all. I ask you to join us now. I ask us to join together and sing. We shall overcome, and I'll tell you the words. I will tell you the words. There, we shall overcome. We shall overcome someday. We shall overcome. We shall overcome someday. Dear Lord, I do believe we shall overcome someday. And the second verse is, the truth will make us free. The truth will make us free. We shall overcome someday.